Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
What's going on, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs. You know, makers, artists, filmmakers, designers, and coders who are on a mission of becoming who you were born to be. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative life for some time, I hope you'll learn some new things and challenge your assumptions about what is possible so you can create new things, bring your ideas to life, and get your work to work. In this interview episode of Getting Work to Work, I talk with approachable badass Melanie Spring. I met Melanie at a conference in Portland a couple months ago where she gave one of the best talks on branding and being yourself that I've ever experienced. I walked up to her at the end of the event and asked her to be on this show. And in this interview, we talk about a variety of ways you can show up for yourself, including owning your voice, speaking with confidence, knowing who you are and what you stand for, listening to yourself, and sharing in order to heal and to build hope. Show notes and links to resources mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/284. You're going to find a workbook that Melanie mentioned called My Life Vision that you can download for free. You'll also find links to stream the show on all major podcast platforms and the opportunity to sign up for my email newsletter, The Curiosity Lab. Each week, I send out some deep thoughts on curiosity along with the things blowing my mind. All right, let's get into this conversation with Melanie. Melanie, welcome to Getting Work to Work. Why don't you share a little bit about who you are and the work you do?
Hi, I'm Melanie Spring, and I run a company called Melanie Spring Productions because, you know, I'm the Melanie Spring part of that. And we're a production company that used to be a brand strategy agency, and now we help humans tell their stories along with branding brands telling their stories. And we put together events to give safe spaces for humans to do that. So
that's awesome.
That's who I am and what I do.
Yeah. As someone who named a business after themselves, I can completely relate to that.
Yeah. I didn't want to for a long time. I had a whole different company that was called Sis Arena, and it was based on my imaginary friend when I was four. And I didn't want my name to be the name of the company ever. And then after 10 years, I was like, I think it's me. So yeah. Dang it.
What do you think it is that stops us from wanting to put our name in the business and then lead us there over time?
I think it's the idea that we want something bigger than ourselves. And then when we realize after a while that people are hiring us for us, and we don't want to have to build a company that's not us. I mean, we want to feel like if we're the reason people are hiring us, why wouldn't we name it after us? But also, I think it's a little bit of pride at the same time where we're like, I don't want to have my name. Like, why would my name be the name of the company? Like, I'm humble. I don't need to have my name be the name of the company. But then after a while, you're like, yeah, but everyone calls it me anyway. So might as well just do that.
Yeah. I always thought it was kind of funny. People would say, what, you just run out of ideas?
For serious though, like nobody really knows my company. His name is like Melanie Spring Productions. It's just XOXO Melanie Spring. So
that's awesome. Well, I had the pleasure of hearing you speak in Portland last month, and right out of the gate, you just captured my attention and connected with me.
Aww,
by
thanks.
Being human and telling just captivating stories. And just why don't we all approach life and speaking and work this way?
Most people put on a facade, and I learned a long time ago that putting on a facade makes me act like somebody that's not me, and it's hard to keep up the act. It's kind of like lying, where if you catch you're lying, you get caught in lying because you can't keep up the act long enough, and it feels like lying to myself not to be myself. So since I'm teaching other people how to tell their stories and be themselves, it would be completely incongruent with who I am not to just be myself, which not everybody likes. So
yeah,
it's not as easy as you think.
Yeah. Was it challenging to adopt that and not only learn it, but to live it?
Oh, big time. Yeah. I mean, the person I am now is the person 10 years ago I was wishing I could be. And I felt like me 10 years ago, but I didn't act like it or look like it, or I didn't live it. I was really trying to figure out how to even think about talking about it. So it was a very softer, much softer version of myself. and tried not to speak up too much because I didn't want to get in trouble. I mean, you know, corporate, like you can get in trouble for anything in a corporate environment. So before I was my own business owner 10 years ago, I was definitely always in trouble for something like what I wore or what I said. I told a client once that it sucked that they couldn't work with us because we were so excited to work together. She told my boss and my boss told like got me in trouble for it. Because I said it sucked. Wow. I know. And I was like, so I can't be me at all at work. Like I have to totally put on like a facade. And it's really hard to do that when you don't feel like it fits you. And I feel like my whole goal in life is to help people really make sure that they're in a place, whether it's a job or their own business, that they can completely be themselves and they're not lying about who they are in one area. And then they finally get to go to like Vegas and show off who they really are. And that like, that's the only time of the year they get to be themselves, which is, that's not the way to live.
No. Well, it's interesting too, because as you're describing like that corporate life where you can get in trouble for anything, like, did you start your business by taking that mentality into it as well?
No, I lost my job 10 years ago when the market hit a huge downturn. And I had wanted to have my own business on this, like I did it on the side for a long time because since 2001, I've had my own business, but it's mostly been like a side project. And I worked for other people, learned all their mistakes, figured out what not to do. And also realized like who the best bosses in the world were, because I had some amazing bosses along the way, some really bad ones, but mostly amazing humans who I worked for. But it took me a long time to really try to figure out how to own my voice, because I was teaching brands how to have a brand voice and how to own their voice and how to live their brand and be who they're meant to be and be the thing that they're meant to be. And I felt myself 5 years in, like totally not fitting that at all. So it took me a long time this is the third business in 10 years, even though it's all been one business, it's like been an iterative process to get to this place where I'm like so happy with my job every day. Like I get excited at 6 a.m. to be up and like writing what I'm going to be working on that day and putting together my Instagram post. But it didn't come naturally to do that because I was always in trouble. So breaking out of that, I'm going to get in trouble if I do this, was really tough.
Yeah. So is this what you do to help others learn to speak with confidence, break down the things that make them afraid or minimize their own stories?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I was talking to one of our trainers the other day and we were talking about how she's going to come on as a trainer in training. And she had gone through my program, Speak With Confidence, already. And she was just like, well, I feel like your whole entire idea behind Speak With Confidence is really how do you rock your life? And I was like, that's exactly it. I'm glad you got that. And she's like, you're teaching us how to speak and you're teaching us how to get on stage and do keynotes and do presentations and write really great talks, but really you're just helping us show up for ourselves. And I was like, yeah, if you don't show up for yourself, you can't show up for others. And she's like, that's exactly what I got out of it. And as much as like I can speak and get up on stage and be a keynote speaker, I learned more about how I can show up in my everyday life than I did worrying about so much about how do I get to be some famous person on stage.
So what is the secret to rocking your life? I want to know.
He's like, tell me the secrets. Well, it has to do more with figuring out exactly who you are and what you stand for and then standing for it and really being true to yourself in that way. Because like I've recently had some times where I've said things that people have taken very wrong and I've gotten in really deep trouble with them because they took it as like mean and malicious when I was just being encouraging. And at the side of it, you're like, but I can't change that about myself. And they're like, well, I just wish you weren't so encouraging. And I'm like, you literally are telling me how not to be myself. I can't do that. It's fundamentally wrong for me to not be encouraging. So it's like, you have to take a step back from relationships like that. And it's being able to put up those boundaries and figure out, is this okay for me to do this? And is it okay for me to step away from people who don't allow me to be myself so that I can fully show up for myself? And that to me is really, once you figure out who you are and what you stand for, then and only then you can rock your life.
So is that what you mean by being unforgettable, knowing who you are and rocking your life? Or is that once you know who you are and you start rocking your life, then you become unforgettable?
Well, I think it kind of goes hand in hand. And most people in the world want to find some significance. They want to be significant to someone or lots of people. And nobody wants to be forgettable. Everyone wants to feel like they stand out, but most people follow the same rules as everybody else. And they, you know, do the American dream thing and buy a house in the suburbs and have kids and get married and like all the things that you're supposed to do, but they don't really think about, well, even within that, there are ways to be significant and unforgettable. And if it's to one person, like you can be significant and unforgettable to your own kid to the point that they can grow up and be someone who's significant and unforgettable to lots of people. And if that's your purpose, then you should do that. Or you might be the opposite, where you were the one who had the mother or father who did that for you. And you can actually stand on their shoulders and be unforgettable and significant, but it could, it doesn't have to be to the whole world. You don't have to be Tony Robbins, who's like, everybody knows who he is kind of thing, but you can also be that to your community or to your family or to the town that you live in because you ran for office. Like that kind of stuff is how you figure out that unforgettable quality. But most people aren't telling their stories, and that's why they're not, they're more forgettable, because they're like, well, no one's going to like that anyway. No one wants to hear my story. No one cares. And when you adopt that attitude, you're definitely going to be forgotten.
Right. So in what ways would you say you're unforgettable?
I don't think people forget me very easily. I think it's because I show up, and I can even read this to you. A woman that I met the other day, I was at a meeting and I was talking about rocking your life, and I did my Rock Your Brand talk. Another woman named Melanie did her talk in between about membership for their associations. And then I went on stage and did it again, like my Rock Your Life talk, the second time. And this one woman texted me afterward, and she had said that during the meeting, she said, do you ever meet someone who is so, they know who they are and they're intrinsically them, that you just want to be a part of their world because of the fact that they're just so themselves? And she wrote me later and she said, you're exactly who I was describing and talking about, those people who are so wildly and unapologetically authentic that the universe can't help but be magnetically pulled into their space. And I was like, that's amazing. That's, yes. Thank you so much for saying that. But it's awesome. Like that kind of an idea, where if you can be wildly and unapologetically, unapologetically authentic, it's that kind of, people want to be near you. They want more of you. They want to be in your atmosphere. And she even said, it's so cool being in your sphere for an afternoon. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I feel like I live for, is how do I remind people that they're allowed to be wildly and unapologetically themselves?
Mm. Wow. How powerful is that?
Yeah. I was like, I'm saving that forever. I'm going to just keep that. Keep it for when my love tank is empty.
One of the ways that you are unforgettable to me was during your presentation, you said something that was just really profound. I mean, yeah, you said a lot of things that were actually profound, but this one was very powerful. And as I was looking through my notes from the event, I wrote that you said, most of us don't get a chance to listen to ourselves. And why do you think that is?
Well, it's because we don't take the time to do it. I mean, everyone tells us, you should meditate, you should work out, you should eat healthy, you should, it's all the should stuff. Like, yeah, great, I should do all that stuff, but am I actually going to do it? And the biggest thing that we can do for ourselves, not just to meditate, and I think meditating is really amazing, and I'm not very good at it, probably not ever going to be good at it, but that's okay. But it's the idea that we can sit with ourselves and be comfortable with ourselves enough to just wait and listen to ourselves, because we have all of our own answers, but we're always asking everybody else. And that's when I was speaking about that, it was that idea that I learned that I had to learn how to trust myself and my own judgment instead of asking for other people's opinions and ideas. Because I've always been that person where I'm like, what do you think about this idea? Do you think this is a good enough idea to do that? And I, like, instead I would be like, why am I asking other people? I'm a badass. I can actually tell people that I'm the one that I can make that decision with. Not, they don't need to help me with that, because I know that I'm supposed to do it if I feel like it's a good thing. And then you can kind of check your gut and go, is this a good thing? Should I do this? And it could be a terrible thing for you, but you made that decision and you get to trust that it was the right thing for you.
Yeah. What's interesting is there's a balance between listening to yourself and listening to the voices of others. And I think we confuse the two so much that we don't learn to trust ourselves in the right moments, and we learn to rely on people in the wrong moments.
Yep, it's true. And I think it's because we don't take the time to really understand what we're supposed to be saying to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like I learned from a functional medicine doctor recently that my body likes and dislikes food just by looking at it.
Wow.
Like, I know what I'm allergic to when I can look at something and go, that's not a good idea. But then I don't listen to it. And I've been eating all these things my whole life that have made me sick. Mm-hmm. And later find out that my body was like, no, you don't like that. Stop eating that. Just because other people are like, oh, that's really healthy for you, your body doesn't take it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't listen to that. I was like, I keep eating this kind of salad or this specific thing, but it lights my mouth on fire every time I do it. Mm-hmm. My body's telling me something. I'm just not listening to it. And when we get a chance to just sit and be with our bodies and listen to our bodies and listen to our minds and listen to what we're trying to say, and we take the time just to be quiet, which how often do we do that?
Right.
With no distractions and nobody telling us anything, no podcast, no music, no nothing, just sit and listen. We get a chance to finally hear what we need to say.
So how do we work through that stubbornness? That stubbornness that says we need to amp up all of the distractions in order to be valuable, and instead, you know, push them aside so that we can hear and learn and then apply. I mean, I don't know how we do that.
It's not an easy thing to do, and I'm not super great at it. That's the first thing I tell people. I'm like, guys, I'm not an expert at this. And most of the time people are teaching other people the things they need to know themselves. I mean, that's 100% true for me. Like, I talk about rocking your life because it's been so hard for me to learn how to do that. That I feel like if I don't share what I've learned with other people, then they're missing out and I'm missing out because I need to hear it and keep reminding myself that it's okay to say what I need to say, even if I need to get in trouble for it. Mm. And even if people don't necessarily like it, they maybe need to hear it, even if they get mad at me for hearing it.
Yeah.
So really realizing that, like, I mean, I'm the first person to distract myself with everything humanly possible, which I'm on day 11 of not drinking. And I can tell you that's a good distraction for me. Because like I would shut my brain down every night with, all right, just get a glass of wine so I don't have to think anymore.
Yeah.
And that wasn't helping me listen to myself at all. It was shutting it off and not helping me go, how can I balance this and feel really good in the morning and get up and really rock my life and being kind of the opposite of what I tell people to do. So being able to just take my own medicine sometimes.
For sure. I really like something that you just said. You said that, you know, we often teach what we need to learn.
Oh, yeah.
And what I like about that is it's, I had a conversation with a friend this morning. He's like, Chris, what do you think about the phrase teach everything you know? And I just started laughing and I'm like, well, I think it comes from a very superficial place where, you know, you're learning the next greatest and biggest thing that's going to be immediately valuable once you learn it. And I said, I feel kind of like I want to reject that. I feel like if you're really going to be a lifelong learner, you're going to learn how to teach what you really need to know. And it's the stuff that you're saying, you know, you need to learn how to rock your life. Well, all the podcasts in the world, all of the books in the world aren't going to help you learn how to rock your life until you learn how to rock your life.
Yeah.
It's like an oxymoron.
Well, it's like buying, I have like 150 business books on my shelf and I've probably read 90% of them. Mm-hmm. But like, how much did they actually teach me to the point that they taught me something different in each book? Most of it's like reminders. Like a lot of times I don't get up and talk about stuff that's like mind-blowingly different than anybody else talks about. I just say it in a different way than other people would because of my views and ideas and how I've learned it.
Yeah.
And that may connect to a lot more people than the 10 other people that spoke about the exact same topic. And it just depends on like Sarai, my COO, she's my business alchemist. She spoke at the same conference you were at. And she talks about burnout a lot because she also went to the doctor shortly after even giving a burnout talk and was just like, oh, wait, I'm still burnt out. It's like, aren't we always teaching the thing that we're supposed to be hearing? Like, isn't that how that seems to work? Like, we're still talking about it because we're still learning it and we still have to grow in it. And I mean, even rocking my story, I keep coming up with new ones where I'm like, I didn't even know that story was in there. I didn't even know that I had that, but taking the time to really listen to myself and go, someone needs to hear this.
Yeah.
I should probably share that. And duh, you tell everyone it's not about you, it's about them. So share it.
Yeah. So what was that last story that you were surprised by?
It's funny. you'll get to hear this first, I guess. So I came up with my big idea for the book that I've been trying to write forever. Ooh. And it's kind of a forgettable book because of that, because it's about forgettable stories. Mm. And it's about how we have all these stories inside of us that have taught us everything that we know, except we've probably forgotten that that even happened. Like, one of the ladies at Speak With Confidence recently told us, like, she at the conference learned that when she was in grade school, I mean, she's in her 50s, late 50s mm-hmm. now. When she was in grade school, a teacher looked at her after she read an assignment out loud and said, "You will never become anything." Aww. And she didn't even remember that until wow. we were at the conference. And I told her, I'm like, "Something's in your way." And she's like, "Yeah, well, I'm just going to tell everyone that they need to, you know, just pull up their bootstraps and do the thing. Cause that's what I've always done. Just put your blinders on and no matter what happens, just keep going." I'm like, "Would you tell your daughter that?" She's like, "No." I was like, "Well, then why would you tell anybody else that?" And she's like, "Well, that's just how I've always done it." And I'm like, "Well, that doesn't sound like very productive. It actually sounds pretty painful to you." And she was crying. She's like, what the heck? Where did that come from?" And I made her go for a walk and she came back in. And my mother, who's one of our support crew, she looked at her and she goes, "Are you okay?" She's like, "No, I'm not." And without even telling her what was going on, my mom looked at her and she said, "You know what? When I left home, when I married Melanie's dad, my stepfather looked at me and said, 'You'll never become anything.'" Mm-hmm. And it clicked so hard in her head that she had a teacher who told her that exact thing. And she got on stage the last day and rocked her talk so hard because it was so apparent that she finally picked that woman up, Mrs. Wells, and moved her out of her way. And now mm-hmm. she's walking forward in a life that she didn't even know she needed to have. And it's the forgettable stories. It's those little things, which the forgettable story that came up for me was that I lived in a house for 5 years. And until the fifth year, I didn't paint it mm-hmm. and I didn't get porch furniture. And I love sitting on a porch mm-hmm. because I was waiting for someone to save me from that house.
Oh, wow.
Which was like, interesting. And another woman told me shortly after that, she's like, "Yeah, actually my mom told me this story. She said, I knew a woman who I went to her house and asked her why her towels were so ratty. And she's like, 'Well, cause I'm waiting until I get married to get new towels.' And she said, 'Are you dating someone?' She's like, 'No.' And she's like, 'Then go buy yourself some new towels.' And she ended up buying towels, meeting her husband and getting married shortly after that, because she wow. was finally ready to not just wait for someone to save her, yeah. but to actually take that step for herself, which totally changed everything.
Wow.
So it's those little forgettable stories that I feel like are the things that make us who we are, but we forget them and we don't even share them. And how impactful would they be if we told somebody what they were?
Right.
Because you don't have to like almost die to live.
Right. Well, and how do we learn those stories that we've forgotten so that we can then purge them from our hearts and minds and communities yeah. and cultures?
Well, most of it's taking the time to listen. Like I was saying, if we take the time to listen and give ourselves the space. I mean, that's what Speak With Confidence has become, is a safe space for a whole bunch of humans to let go of the stuff that isn't serving them and bring in the stuff that is. Mm-hmm. And we don't typically make a retreat. Like when we take a retreat, we're usually just trying to shut everything down and read crappy books and, you know, drink Mai Tais on the beach somewhere. That's what we do as a retreat. But if we're not retreating from our whole life, we're retreating to focus on us and do what we need to do for us, then those things come to the surface again.
Yeah. When you said the word retreat, I kept thinking of the word treat. Why do we treat a retreat like it's, you know, something not enjoyable instead of right. putting the enjoyment in a retreat?
Oh, yeah. I like that. Put the treat in retreat. Yes. I love it.
Yeah. That now I'm just like, treat and retreat, went out in a boat.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Woo! That's awesome.
So one of the things that you have a unique view of is branding, in that it's meant to light humans up. So everything about you is about lighting humans up. What do you mean by that?
Well, goodness, I don't think I've thought about it as that, but it's definitely true. I mean, the idea that humans are meant to be full of joy. I mean, the whole reason we're here is to find joy. And it's not to find joy in stuff, because stuff doesn't end up giving us joy, but we're all here to be here for others. Like we're here as, our purpose, the reason that we're in existence, is not to sit in our home by ourselves staring at a TV screen. We're here to, like, when you volunteer to help other people, how much does it light you up and how much does it help you then get filled up to be able to help more people? And I was told a couple of years ago by a woman who is a numerology expert. She's a woman who is like, she's a healer. She's a shaman woman. And she told me, she's like, you're a lighthouse. Your job is to be a lighthouse. And I was like, okay, so tell me what that means. And she's like, well, your job is to stand in one place and shine a light so that people are attracted to that and can learn and be filled up by your light so that they can go out and be bigger lights for you. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting way to look at it. She's like, but lighthouses don't go running around trying to save boats. They stand there and shine their lights. And I was like, I've been running around trying to help people. I've been saving boats all over the place by running around an island trying to help them. And I just need to stand there and realize that when they're ready and they see that light and they feel like that's something that they want, I mean, that's what it means to be human, is to be joy to other people.
Well, and at the same time, as you're describing a lighthouse, it's meant to show you where the danger is so that in the storm, you're not going to crash and destroy yourself.
Right. Yep.
Oof. What a powerful image.
Yeah. It was one of those times that I was like, I needed to hear that so that I can stop exhausting myself. Because if I stay filled with light by having others show up to be able to have me pour my light into them, then they light up even more of the world and more people can see what they're needing to be saved from. But nobody's broken. Nobody needs to be fixed. They just need to figure out how to find their joy and where that comes from and understand that it's in themselves already, but how can you find that light and be able to shine it for other people?
Yeah. So in this journey of finding your light, you know, going from always moving to being in one place to where you can help more people, have you had to reconcile kind of the business aspect of it?
Or
does the business fall in line with it?
Yeah, I had to change the whole business model because of it. Yeah. The thing that she had explained to me, which is, I'll someday tell you all of this, but the numbers in numerology are 1 through 9, and all of us have a life path, which is based on our birth date. So all the numbers in your full birth date are added up to be a number. And mine is a 22, which there's only 9 numbers, but there's also an 11 and a 22, which means that they're master numbers. So if I'm able to get grounded and really listen to myself, I can bring in stuff that other people couldn't possibly see. So some people explain that as like ADD. It's really just being able to tap into a deeper source of information. And I always thought this was fascinating because I grew up as a Christian and all that stuff was like, that's woo-woo stuff. Like, stay away from that kind of stuff. But it really aligns with who I am as a person. And then I had to start thinking about my business and going, okay, if I'm a master builder, like my whole job is to help other people by showing them how to put the building blocks of something together, filling them with light and allowing them to go out and do that thing, not build 16 different businesses myself. I have one thing that people come to. I had to start building events. So instead of me going to corporate clients all the time and being like, let me help you with your brand and let me help you with your content and your messaging and your voice and all that stuff, I realized if I created events and had them in places that people could come to, then I could build a community of practice around that. And one of the guys who I talked to at this last event that we hosted, he walked up to me at the end. He goes, I don't know if you know this, because he's a doctor in healthcare. So he does nursing home care, like elder care, basically. And he got his doctorate in this because he had to help his mother. And he was telling me the science behind a community of practice is that there is no teacher, that each person in that group is a teacher and each person in that group is also a student. And I was like, that's exactly what I want it to be. I don't want to be the teacher. I want to be able to bring people together in a safe space that helps them light each other up. And every time we've done events, which we've done 5 big events in the last 2 years, everyone walks away going, I don't even know how that happened, but everyone was like best friends within 24 hours. I'm like, yeah. And now you're friends for life. And that's really, I think, how I had to shift the business model is I can go into a corporate setting and work with a whole team to create that safe space within the organization. But it's the coolest when people can bring their people to one space and learn from each other in a way that everyone has different views and different ways of learning and different ways of teaching and different things that they know that they can all share that in a community of practice together.
selfishly, I am fascinated with this because as you're describing things, I'm like, this is what I've been searching for myself. And it makes a lot of sense because the numbers of my birth date add up to 22 as well. So, mm-hmm.
Oh, really? There you go. Did you just add them up right now?
When you were saying that, I start adding it up. I'm like, 22.
That's fascinating. Well, I'll have to introduce you to Georgette so you can get the rest of your numbers read.
There you go.
She'll tell you lots of fascinating things, and then we can have an even bigger conversation about it.
See, that's what it's about, because it's like I love conversation at any level, but then when you can go deeper into things that you can't even comprehend at the time, you just have to go there. You know?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that's what life's all about. Forget the surface stuff. save that for the next Hollywood film.
I'm actually really terrible at surface conversations, like about the weather and whatever. It's like, okay, can we move on to real things so I don't have to just keep talking about that?
Exactly. And it makes some people really uncomfortable because, you know, when you dive right into something that you're wrestling with and they're just they just want to talk about sports or movies or whatever. It's just like, I just don't have time for that.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, I get myself in trouble a lot because I go into but you told me you wanted to do this. Like you wanted to get on this program and do this thing and you're not doing it. Why is that not happening? And then I get in trouble because they're like, stop badgering me about it. I don't want to have accountability for that. Like if I wanted accountability, then I would ask you. And I was like, dude, I feel like if I told you that I was doing this thing and you didn't keep me accountable, I wouldn't want to be your friend. It's like having something between your teeth and they don't tell you the whole time. You're like, I don't want that. Thanks.
We live in a fascinating time where we can play with things, where we can have these ideas, but then we don't want true accountability to do those things.
Right. And it's hard. It's a hard space to be in when your whole, like, not your job, but your whole life is to help people get out of their own way. It's really hard to hold back on that when a lot of people don't want to. They're very happy complaining about their crappy life.
Oh, there's a thread right there that we can have. It's like, how do we save not only other people from a crappy life, but ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's true. I've been there. I didn't like it. I'm not interested in it again. So, yep.
Moving on.
We could go really deep in that, but we're not going to right now.
Exactly. We'll save that for the next conversation. But one of the profound quotes that I wrote down from you is that you said that story is the shortest distance between truth and human beings.
Mm-hmm.
That just blew my mind when I read that and when I heard it and when I came back to it. And why do you think that is?
And it's a quote it's not even my quote. Like I need to find out who did that. It was on the slide, I think, but I can't remember. Mm. But it's the idea that most of us are walking around with a shell around us and we're not sharing who we are with other people. We're keeping ourselves at a distance from other human beings. And it doesn't allow us to be fully truthful to ourselves and to others. And I do an exercise in a lot of my workshops where I have everyone practice sharing a simple story with each other. And I basically like have them sit down and say, okay, you have 2 minutes to share any story that you want to. But right before I do that, I preface it with, I had a woman at one of my conferences do this. And the whole time I was talking, I was like, you're right where you're supposed to be, right in the seat you're supposed to be in this room right now, in the job that you're in, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, you're right where you're supposed to be because you need to learn something from whatever it is you're dealing with. And she said this, and it was at the end of the conference. I'm just turning off. I got a little notification and I was like, no, don't make noise. but she said at the event, she came up to me at the end and said, so I was in the seat next to the person I was supposed to be sitting next to, because she looked at me and said, I don't know why I'm telling you this story. And this was supposed to be like, share a tiny little story, not a big story. You had a pony when you were a kid. Great job. You shared a little story. Let's move on, you know? And it's happened a lot where people will have stories that they share that they're like, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but, and this happened to her to the point that she said, I'm 18 years sober of a drug addiction. And she's like a very if you want to put a little box together of what a Midwest mom from the 80s looks like, that's what she looks like. And she did not look like your put a box around it drug addict type. She didn't look like she, you know, what you would think of that way. And she was like, I had postpartum depression and I didn't really know what to do. And I was taking different medication to keep up with like keeping up with the kids. And after a while, I had gotten to the point that I had to choose between my kids and my drug addiction. And today I'm 18 years sober. And wow. She had looked at her and she said, I know exactly why you had to tell me that. Because my mother left me when I was a year old because of her drug addiction and she didn't have a choice. Wow. And that day they had like, that's the shortest distance between them because they were able to share something, a bond that the two of them would never have had. And they worked at the same company and one helped the other one heal from something she'd had for 35 years as pain because she didn't really think about the fact that her mom didn't have a decision to make. She couldn't make it. Hmm. And that distance was so much shortened because of that story. And it's that like, truth between the two of them, and they were able to go deeper and deeper into a relationship they never would have had otherwise.
Yeah.
So when we share our stories, other people are allowed to heal from that. And it's so amazing how that happens at every conference I do that at, where people are like, I had no idea the person next to me is actually from my hometown. We went to the same high school together. Like that kind of stuff, like little stuff, but there's also super deep stuff. Mm-hmm. Where you don't realize that that one thing that they say triggered something in you that you're like, I haven't thought about that in a really long time.
Yeah. Wow.
If that explains it.
Well, yeah. And I imagine too, that as the facilitator of this conference, of this event, you know, we often in this world look to validation as the monetary reward, but this is validation on a whole nother level.
Yeah, it goes so deep to like the space that we are walking around as human stories. I mean, we're just a collection of stories and we are who we are because of the things that we've gone through and been through and good or bad. And it's really amazing to me because Rob Bell is one of my favorite podcasters. He has the Robcast. Mm-hmm. And his podcasts are, it's just like preaching, basically. He used to be a pastor a long time ago, and now he has a whole documentary about him that's called The Heretic, because everyone calls him a heretic for not, you know, like not reading the Bible the same way everyone else did. And he's fascinating, just a fascinating human being. But he was telling about how he was at a conference and he was talking to all these people and had a Q&A session at the end of it. And one woman said, I want to know why God does bad things to good people. And he said, excuse me, I don't believe that he does. What do you mean? And he goes, the woman said, well, my daughter died and I don't understand why that's possible, that that's okay. Cause mm-hmm. I'm not a bad person. How could my daughter have died? And he said, I can't tell you the answer to that, but I know someday the answer will come to you. And a woman in the audience said, she said, I know. She mm-hmm. said, because my daughter died and it's my job today to hold you. And it's going to be your job someday to hold someone else when it's time. And I was like, wow. Just every time I get tears in my eyes, I mean, you can probably hear it. Like,
yeah,
it's just so deep that when people share, they're able to heal and they're able to help each other and good or bad, like to have hope. I mean, even sharing my relationship with people that I'm 38 and I finally met somebody and it's really amazing. Other people have hope because I share how amazing it can be. When I had no hope for it ever being amazing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow. Aren't stories awesome?
I love stories. Awesome. I have so many of them. I'm like, I just wish someone would take all the stuff out of my head and put it in a book. That would be way easier than writing it.
Yeah, but then it's going to just sit on someone's shelf that they're going to like be like, oh, that's just like everyone else's book, you know?
Right. And
then, but then at a certain point, when you have this moment where you can actually sit across from someone and start, you know, connecting them to these deeper stories, that's when it comes alive.
Yeah. Oh, it's so true. Mm. So true.
So you created a Kick-Ass Humans Club. What's that about?
Well, the Kick-Ass Humans Club was my safe space on Facebook because everyone was posting about, oh my gosh, all of the things that I never wanted to hear about. So every time I would open Facebook, I'd be frustrated because someone was showing how all of these dogs were being abused and whoever is in politics is doing something stupid again and like just all that stuff. And it was just another shooting in another school. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I would really, really love to show how people can really show up for each other in a way that keeps things positive. And we have a way to share that positivity. So mm-hmm. I finally started the Kick-Ass Humans Club because I'm like, well, I only work with kick-ass humans. That's my, you know, the small bit of people that I'm willing to work with. They have to be willing to identify as a kick-ass human. And people are like coming out of the woodwork, like, I'm a kick-ass human. Of course I'm a kick-ass human. And I'm like, good, great. Come join me and like hang out with me and show the world that you are the person that you're supposed to be, you know, living on purpose. And being able to create that space that people feel comfortable posting about things or asking questions, or it's not just an entrepreneurs group. It's not just a corporate group. It's not just a mom's group. It's a group of people who are coming from all sorts of backgrounds to love on each other and share good memories and share good stories and post pictures of what they did this weekend with like their daughter dancing on the countertop kind of thing, you know, like silly things that make people happy instead of bring everybody down. Cause there's too much sadness.
Yeah. I have to ask, has it been challenging to brand yourself as a kick-ass human or even an approachable badass?
I think if you use ass in anything, people just laugh and think it's awesome. Well, the approachable badass thing came from me actually asking everybody I know. And I did the exercise that I tell other people to do when you're trying to figure out your brand. Text 10 of your favorite people the phrase, what are 3 to 5 words that describe me? And write, as they're sending that to you, write down a list of how you want people to describe you, and then match the two lists together and see what's the overlap between the two. And that's how what I came up with is everyone was like, you're such a badass. Like, you're always doing really cool stuff. And like, you're like pushing yourself and you're doing things you're scared of and just that kind of thing. And they're also like, but you're really approachable and you're friendly and everyone wants to be your friend. Like every time you do a conference, like every person after is like, I want to be your friend. But I use that friendly piece where I get all of your secrets and then I can help use them against you to get you to do the thing you're supposed to be doing. So approachable and badass are very opposite words that as mashed up, they become who I am. And my brand voice is actually Ellen and Pink mixed together, which is approachable badass. Nice. So being able to kind of throw that together and be myself, I have it in my subject or my footer on my email so that people know, like, I'm an approachable badass. And if that's offensive to you, you're not going to want to work with me. And if you don't like it that people tell it like it is, you're going to hate working with me. So awesome. It didn't take much to do that. And I think I pretty much live that brand every day and everything that I'm doing. So I don't think so.
That's awesome. Well, if the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, what does the first step look like for us who want to be kick-ass, that want to be human, that want to be and live the story that's in our hearts?
The first step is to put together your 10-year vision, which sounds really scary. And I actually just yesterday finished, I tell people to do this and I have like a little list of things to do, but I finally put together a little workbook that I can actually send you. You can have people download it for free.
That's awesome.
For the 10-year vision. And it's really putting together your life vision. And I stole it from Zingerman's. I don't know if you've heard of the brand Zingerman's up in Michigan.
No.
They're a deli company that wrote out a business vision for their business based on the sights, smells, and sounds, not just the numbers. And I thought that was the most fascinating thing I'd ever heard. So I started doing this myself quite a few years ago. Every single year, I'd update my 5 to 10 year vision, depending on how I was feeling that day. Mm-hmm. And I would do it where I would picture myself in a space and describe everything I saw around me. So I'd take a deep breath and sit there and just kind of visualize for a minute and then starts like I can smell breakfast cooking in the other room. Mm. And I can see my dog playing with his bone and I can feel the cozy cushions under my chair. And I'm taking a 6-month sabbatical for my business to come up with new ideas because our business has gotten to $25 million in revenue. And I have a team that can really run it without me there. You know, just like start describing my life and I'm looking forward to my vacation and I'm giving away this amount of money and I've adopted 2 foster kids to be able to help them get into college next year. And like that kind of stuff that you're like, how do you really picture that? And all you have to do is think about what would I love to have around me 10 years from now? And then that one step you take is, what's one thing I can do today that will help me get there? And I actually shared my recent 10-year vision with my team, and I asked them to write their own because I wanted to know where they wanted to be. And for Christmas this last year, Michelle, my booking manager, sent me a giant box in the mail for Christmas with 8 different Christmas presents in it, all wrapped, and they were in order. And she said, I read your 10-year vision, and I decided instead of waiting 10 years to get these things, you should have them now. And she she sent me a cozy blanket, like a super soft blanket with XOXO Melanie Spring on it.
Oh, cool.
And she gave me a journal, and she gave me a, like an insulated wine glass and like all this stuff that I had pictured, including a plant your own Christmas tree. So that when I had the house that I had in my vision, I could just plant that tree. It would be ready to go 10 years from now to be able to plant next to the house so I could have a Christmas tree someday. Like that much forethought in it. And it's when you start sharing that vision with people, they're willing to go with you in it. Like when you tell people, this is what I want out of my life, they're like, well, how do I help you get there? Because we're all willing to help each other. It's not like it's a competition. Like, you're not going to compete with me for the same house and dream that I have. How about I help you with your dream and you can help me with mine? Yeah. So taking the time to really do that and work through that every year, every 2 years, to really think about how has it been evolving and changing, and reading back through your old ones just to see how your vision has changed or what you want differently. It's amazing what it can do. So I put a worksheet together and I'll send it to you so you can link it for everybody.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What a powerful model of leadership that is so needed today. It is so needed.
And it takes no time to do it, but most of us don't take the time, like you said, to listen to ourselves and ask what we really want.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Melanie, you have shared so much in this episode. And so the last question that I have for you, you mentioned Rob Bell's podcast earlier.
Oh, yeah.
But what was the last book or podcast that not only blew your mind, but you put into action?
Oh, man. It was the one I was talking about, the Robcast, when he has one episode, which I'll send you the link to, which is called You Listening to You. And that was the one that I was listening to right before I heard I Trust You from myself. And it was like you had heard it at the conference, but it was a 4-hour drive in Kentucky that the first hour I listened to the podcast episode. And at the end, he said, turn off everything and just listen. So I did. And I got really frustrated at it until a semi almost ran me off the road. And I was shaking violently. And I'm a really good driver, so I didn't know why I was shaking. And it was in the rain. And it was just like all the conditions were bad. And I realized that I needed to learn how to trust myself and my ability to just know that I can do whatever I put my mind to, and I don't have to ask other people for it. And being able to do that shifted that whole perspective for me, to be able to just go, I have to stop and listen sometimes. And it totally, like, not very many things blow my mind much anymore, because I feel like I've read it all, heard it all, done it all. But at the same time, sometimes that one thing is hitting you at the right moment. And that podcast episode, You Listening to You, was just a huge shout out to Rob Bell for doing that thing, because I'm so glad he did.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Melanie, thank you so much for being not only an approachable badass, but taking time out of your badass schedule to just spend time with me and spend time with the people that listen to this show. It's pretty humbling to hear your stories and to learn from you. Thank you.
Well, I have to give you a huge compliment, because there are not many podcast interviewers who make me have to really think about what I'm about to say. So thank you for challenging me today. That was really awesome.
Yeah, thank you. That means a lot. Be sure to visit gwtw.co/284 to download Melanie's workbook, My Life Vision, as she mentioned towards the end of the episode, especially if you need help to discover your life's 10-year vision. I know for myself, I don't really think that far ahead, so I'm going to be printing off this worksheet and filling it out myself. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation and got as much from it as I did. And until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.